You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And with me, as always, on a Thursday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Now, welcome both of you. David, I want to start with you because we're going to start with South Africa today, and it's because there's been so many results out, and a lot of those results are from SA-focused companies. I look back to Omnia, Oceana, Alexander Forbes, Rainbow Chickens, they came out with a corporate announcement. We've had Spar and Telkom yesterday and Mr. Price today, and there have been others. Maybe you could pick your favourites or your rogues within all those and more.
I think you have to look at each one individually, and they're not easy to understand because in every one of those sets of accounts, there's some kind of adjustments or there's something that you have to look deeper into. You know, even when I looked at Mr. Price today, on the face of it, they're bragging that their sales are up. But a lot of the sales came from an acquisition. And if you take out the acquisition, then the sales are moderate. And I think that depicts what's happening at the ground. Yes, they're picking up market share because that's the only way they can grow is to steal from somebody else. And generally, it's from an underperforming store or alternatively from smaller retailers who haven't got the wider purchasing power. Yeah, so if you look at it, yeah, their headline earnings up, but the share price was down, which reflects what the market thinks of it. There's no great excitement. And I think broadly, many of the results were the same as that. MultiChoice, for example, in the midst of this bid by Canal Plus, you know, you see that they need this, they absolutely need this deal.
Yes.
You know, because they're under severe pressure. And, it also depicts what's happening in the industry and also a company which is under severe financial pressure. You know, they're trying their hardest to do well. But, whether I looked at Oceana, whether I looked at what was the other one, Omnia, all of them have issues, have issues that are affecting them. So our market's just kind of bumbling along. It's going nowhere. We've been around. We're now in the midst of June. And if you look at our all share index, it's fundamentally done nothing. You know, it's just gone sideways. So we'll come back to it, you know, give Viv a chance to say his piece and we can go into more detail.
Yeah, Viv, we're going to go to macro with you. I'm going to go to macro with you because I want to talk about interest rates. Now, because of somebody mucking about in my house and making a lot of noise last week, we couldn't speak. But on that day, we had the ECB cutting rates by 25 basis points ahead of the Fed, which is unusual. We'd had Canada before that. We'd had Switzerland and Sweden before them as well. And suddenly, everyone, all eyes on the Fed. But they were stoic in their forthright stance not to cut rates until it's absolutely necessary. Last night, the meeting, Viv, what do you make of it? Are they being too cautious?
I think they're pretending to be too cautious. If you had to ask me what their actual conviction is, I think they want to cut rates and they're looking for, you know, some reasonable numbers to come through. But as I told you in the past, you know, if you look at this on the surface, what the numbers look like in terms of inflation, economic growth, unemployment, etc., in the U.S. in the last couple of months, it really would not justify a rate cut. However, in the last couple of days, you've had some interesting numbers. You talked about the CPI number coming in 0.1% better than lower than expected. We had the PPI number coming out today significantly lower than expected. And the Fed basically said they're looking at one rate cut in December and a few in the next year. I think these numbers that we've had for PPI especially and also CPI, even though CPI came out before the Fed talked, may indicate that we are on the right trend with regards to inflation in the U.S. We need to be seeing some housing prices falls. The latest rental numbers I've seen come from the U.S. are looking at softer prices, so that is, I think, a big positive. We start seeing shelter falling. We already are seeing things like, petrol prices, the gasoline price, when you call it, also coming down a little bit. I think that we are going to see some numbers coming through the next, few months that make it easier for the Fed to think about cutting rates. Just on the gasoline price, so the U.S. is basically reducing its gasoline reserves because they have enough, local supply, their petroleum, and they have the biggest refinery capacity in the world. So those reserves don't need to be there. And that's also helping prices come down a bit as well. But I think that the Fed wants to cut rates. And I think over the next few months, if things carry on like they did the last couple of days, they may have an excuse to do more than that one cut they were talking about.
Yeah, and that's what people were talking about earlier in the year, maybe three or four cuts. But now if we get one, people are happy. If we get two, people will be ecstatic. We'll come to the US 10-year bond yield later on when I give you some prices. But just quickly staying with you, Viv, on the CPI, PPI numbers, but go to a different country now, China. China's CPI came out at plus 0.3%. Which is, you know, it's barely changed, let's face it. But PPI again down. I think it's 13 months down in a row, 1.2% weaker. Now, that if I was sitting in the West, which I am, I would say, that's fantastic. That means we're importing deflation, which is great. And for the consumer, the prices have come down, which is great as well. But the world doesn't see it like that. I mean, the first thing the EU does, and it's probably not linked to it, in fact, definitely not linked to it, is they charge a whack more for the importation of a Chinese electric vehicle to protect their own industries and their jobs. Strange things going on in China, Viv.
Oh, no, I mean, look, the trend against China has been really strong in the last couple years, especially. I mean, we've seen the U.S. in the AI space, and obviously I'm talking AI because that's my book. Yes. But they've really cracked down on the export of chips to China, which is holding them back significantly. They've made moves where you can't be a American citizen and work for certain Chinese companies, and that's also hurt them. We've seen Microsoft move some, you know, research facilities from China to Toronto. I think it was something Canada. So that's obviously part of this trend. The electric vehicle stuff from the EU, I think that's, you know, to be expected. The Chinese obviously are engaging in some very strong, you know, industrial policy, and that's been a thing for a while. And I think the final reaction that they're getting right now is more indicative of what the effect in the US and Europe is, as opposed to what China is particularly doing. The China has been doing the same thing they've been doing for many, many years. And it's just that the trend again has turned against China in the last couple of years. Regarding the inflation number, that's more to do with weakness, I think, than any kind of like productivity increases. And I think that might even call for more stimulus in China than anything else. The consumer is under pressure. The Chinese are facing the possibility of what happened in Japan in the 1990s, where they effectively had lost three decades of growth from like 1990 till now. And the Chinese, I think, are fearful that that might be happening to them, especially as it's happened to them way before they got rich. Japan at least was, you know, stagnant when they were rich. If China stagnates now, they're going to be stagnant and poor.
Yeah, and also the demographic situation, of which we touched on for on several occasions, is also very, very similar to what happened to in Japan and what is still happening in Japan. David, South African politics, please. We're ticking down. I think there's a holiday on Mondays. I know it's Youth Day, yeah. which to me is the most significant public holiday in South Africa. It falls on a Sunday, but you're getting Monday off, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. But I think there will be resolution, and just judging from the headlines, it's a government of national unity between the IFP, the DA, and the ANC, and I think that's the route that's going to be taken. But I think what's important, what's very significant, is that in Natal, in KZN, I think they're putting the same three together with an added one, which is going to not allow the MK to rule. Yeah. Yeah. So they will take control of KZN as well, which I think is hopefully is a good move, because I'm not sure that the NK have any policies other than destroying whatever they touch.
But so, couldn't that incite social unrest because of the revered status of Jacob Zuma?
Well, it depends if he's, you know, it depends on what he does. I mean, he's a very slippery type of a character, and you're not quite sure what he's going to do. The last thing, I'm not sure he's going to sit back and accept it. So, but they can do it, you know, and it depends on whether you respect democracy or not. So I you know, I haven't got a feel for, you know, how the people feel there and what they're going to do if this does happen. But I mean, in terms of numbers, well, you put the ANC, the DA, the IFP, and there's another party, I think, who've got one seat or something, which gives him a majority in Natal, and that's it. So, look, I'm hoping all of this leads to a better South Africa. You know, there's so much to do here. There's so much to fix. And that's all on my mind at the moment. I'm not interested in politics. I'm just interested in people getting into getting into government, not worrying about the salaries and the blue light brigades and all the cars that they're going to accumulate and all the perks they're going to accumulate. Just want people to get in there and get their hands dirty and start fixing up things here and creating an environment in which we can try and prosper.
Yeah, we have South Africa really has a chance here if they get the coalition right and they all work together as one. I think you're absolutely right. Very quickly on KwaZulu-Natal, because you're more familiar with the region than myself and David, what do you make of the politics there? Will Zuma get a little bit irked by being left out and therefore cause mischief?
I think he will, but I don't think it won't be like it was back a couple of years ago. The reason being is quite simple. A couple of years ago, I think there was enough of a Zuma faction within the ANC that it kind of, you know, delayed the implementation of law and order. You didn't see the police, you didn't see the army in place to actually do something, and that kind of let people go wild, if you know what I mean. And if you look at the death toll, it was mostly between citizens that were causing this, you know what I mean? Often it wasn't even the rioters and the looters that were causing the deaths. It was often, you know, people in their, you know, areas that were fighting back that were causing the kind of deaths were happening. I think this time around, the ANC is leadership of the ANC is going to be pretty, tough on any kind of violence. I think there probably will be more of an army presence in KZN to make sure that if anything does go up, the military probably will step in to some extent and sort that out. And I think the police as well are going to be much more beefed up in that period of time. So I don't think it's going to be a case of what it was in 2021. That being said, I mean, the coalition, like David has talked about, is very, very, very precarious. So it comes down to the IFP, yeah, the DA, the ANC, and probably the NFP. The NFP is a split of organization from the IFP. Those guys together gets to 41 votes. On the MK side, they have about 37 seats. They will get probably, I don't think the EFF is going to join the ANC group. So if the EFF adds on to that 37, but with the NFP, they get them to 40. So they wouldn't be able to get a majority unless they get either one of the ANC, IFP or the DA to come to their side. Because without that, it's just going to be a split thing. Whereas the ANC basically has a majority with everybody besides, the MK and the EFF. So I think that is probably going to mean that we are going to have, the ANC / IFP ruling the province. I don't know what the DA thinks it's going to, I don't think the DA has enough of a mandate in the area to actually do much. I think it'll be an IFP-DA-led kind of thing, but IFP-ANC-led kind of thing, but the DA obviously supporting them. It might obviously mean that there'll be some deal elsewhere in the country where the DA gets an unfair share of something, because they got this, they're helping out in KZN, so I don't know what's going to happen there, quite frankly.
Okay, so it's a complicated situation which has to resolve itself under the constitution in a few days' time, David.
Yeah, the markets have been remarkably calm.
Yes,
around it. You know, and what's quite interesting to see is that the rand's improved, but I don't think it's got anything to do with politics. It's more to do with what we've been seeing in inflation. You know what what Viv is talking about. I think that's the reason that it's come down. The dollar's under pressure, and the rand has improved. You know, that's the other side of the equation, or the algorithm. Lindsay, there are other things as well. I mean, which I'm also having a little bit of trouble fathoming out. When it comes, just extending what Viv said about inflation, I'm in his camp. I think we're going to see more cuts this year than were indicated. So, I think the market's positioning itself for that. But you would have seen that you're going to give us the US bond rates, but they're coming down quite dramatically. And yet, against the falling dollar, against falling bond yields, commodity prices have just tanked. You know, we're seeing it in our market as well, with commodity shares all under pressure.
Gold stocks getting whacked.
Well, Goldfields have an issue in Chile. You know, they've got their Chile, or whatever you want to say. It's very chilly there, literally. And because the weather is
bad, hitting the mines.
And the shares are down 11%. I mean, it just gives you an idea of how precarious, how difficult mining is. And, you know, the regions in which you mine. So, but I'm trying to reconcile the commodity market, which we all say traditionally, if the dollar comes under pressure, inflation comes down, you know, good for equities, good for commodities. It's not showing sign of that. Hey?
Talking about weather, and I'm going off at a tangent here, and neither of you need to comment upon it unless you feel very strongly. And I remember Mr. Price a few years ago got their buying completely wrong, and they'd ordered too much of this and too much of that, and then the weather messed them up. Now, as you have a look at Europe now, there's been no summer here. It's now, what is it, June the 13th. It's mid-June. There's been no summer. I'm looking out my window now of my studio and I can see some trees, which are nice, but it's just a grey blanket, grey-white blanket of cloud. You can't, the people that come here, and it's a tourist town, they go to the beach, but what are you going to do on the beach on a day like this apart from freeze? I mean, it doesn't get above 15 degrees here. So think of someone like Hennes & Mauritz, the buyer at Hennes & Mauritz for Northern Europe. You've been buying all your summer stuff because everyone's going to come and put on T-shirts and shorts and all sorts of other lovely things, but no one buys it because it's too cold to wear the things. So this climate change business is affecting things at so many different levels. Now then, that's my little rant.
Well, I have to tell you the opposite. When you said Mr. Price, it's happened again. So.
Oh, has it?
Yeah. The late onset of winter here, you know, because it's been pretty warm. But we've had maybe one kind of cold day. But, you know, all the fashions that they buy and all the sweaters and so on are not leaving the shop. So they've been caught in that again. They've just said that the last 2 months have been kind of tough because of the late onset of winter. So I thought you were going to give that story. But
no, this is an historical problem with Mr. Price and with other retailers. You think that they'd get some sort of meteorologist in the palm of their hand and say, what's the long-term forecast for June, July, August? I don't know. Anyway, Viv, I saw something on television, on mainstream television the other night about Apple. I don't know if you're familiar with the company, but it's the second biggest in the world in terms of market capitalization. Number one is Microsoft, and number three is Nvidia, which is obviously an underachiever.
I think that's all you said. I think Apple's Dutch number one, yeah?
Apple is 3.2. Wait, I've got it right in front of me. It's 3.29 trillion, and Microsoft 3.28 trillion.
There you go.
As we stand.
Apple, top of the pile. Right. I saw this thing about, they said, this is how it went, Viv, and you can comment upon it and shoot me down. They said, we are going to incorporate artificial intelligence in all our new phones. And the market went, that's boring. The point is that AI is in Apple iPhones anyway, in a more sort of more demure way. I mean, we use AI every time we use our smartphone. But then the presenter said, and these are the two features that they focused on. One was, if you've got a meeting and it's in your diary, the phone will tell you how to get there. I don't need that. First of all, I don't have meetings. Secondly, if I did have a meeting, I'd know how to get there. The second one was, it was something really frivolous, how to write a message. I went to school. I know how to write a message. So I thought that's why the market was underwhelmed. But suddenly, mid-session in New York, Apple's share price shot up to a new all-time record high. And as you both just said, it's now the biggest company in the world with a market cap of 3.29 trillion. Viv, please tell me about this AI business with Apple, because if it does incorporate it into their new phones that they're going to be selling soon, does it immediately become out of date? What have they done?
Okay, so this is something I think is very, very big for Apple, right? I don't know about you guys, but I don't buy new phones every year anymore.
No.
In fact, I don't even buy them every 2 years. So, because at the moment, my phone, which is, I think, it's an S22. I think it's about 2 or 3 years out of date. But the camera is good enough for me. The phone in battery life doesn't affect it. I haven't cracked the screen yet, surprisingly, with the kid. But, you know, it's functional. And I will get a new phone when the phone breaks. The reason being is that there's no reason to upgrade. But there's a couple of things that Apple has done right now I think is very interesting. Firstly, the way artificial intelligence works is that you've got to have a thing to basically work the program. That thing can be on your computer or on the cloud. Apple has given you a secure kind of server, private server, where you can upload your data and then it can look through your data for you, right? Now, the important thing about AI is that because it's so powerful, you need to give it your data to basically make it really work. And who do you trust with that? Microsoft's going with the whole, on your PC kind of stuff. Apple, I think, is going to go to on your phone kind of stuff in a couple of years' time when they have the ability to put a chip on your phone that's going to be strong enough to actually run the system, which is going to be an automatic upgrade for most people, I think. But until that point, you're using the Apple server, and Apple says it's going to protect you against any kind of breach of privacy. I don't know if you saw, there's an Elon Musk tweet that came out that he says, no, they're going to give silly down the river in terms of data. But I don't think that's true. I think Apple, in like one of their big things has always been the protection of privacy. And so they're going to give you the ability to use OpenAI. And OpenAI, I think, is going to be the breach that you worry about. But they've made a deal with OpenAI not to use your data. You can say what you want about OpenAI. I don't think they're going to go up against Apple. They may want to go up against Scarlett Johansson, but not Apple. And so I don't think they're going to, breach that there. And they also say that you have to approve, if you want to send it to OpenAI or not. You can say no and that stuff. But the power of this is going to be insane. It's going to be beyond this, because if AI has access to all your emails, AI has access to all your stuff, AI can basically, you can say, what's a great place to go to? And it'll tell you, based on what you've done in the past, where you've been to in the past, it knows, for instance, that you may have bought from here and says, hey, there's a sale on this particular thing, on this item. The amount of data that Apple collects on you, if an AI had a full look at that, in terms of your spending, in terms of what you like, in terms of what you commented and on stuff and so on, your friends and whatnot, it would be like having a super assistant, like you're having a full-on professional PA in your pocket for everybody. And you can imagine, organize my laundry. I'm going to go to Durban for the next week or so. Book me a Airbnb. It'll know what you like, know where you've been to before, know, all those kind of things. Book me a car. It knows what car you like. It would literally be like having a super PA on your books for the price of an Apple phone.
Okay, that's a very interesting...
I know what you're thinking. I know exactly what you're thinking.
Go on then. What am I thinking? What are you, my AI personal assistant?
Yeah, your life is so simple. Mine is also. I'm not sure I'm going to use that. I just like it.
But you don't have a choice. You have to use it if you put something into your phone. It'll automatically do it, which I'm not against at all. But I don't need the frivolous things because, as I said, I was lucky enough to go to a decent school. A state school, but a decent school. I'm being a Luddite. I'm being general Ludd here.
I think when you see, it's because we don't use our phones as intensely as perhaps the younger generation who live off their phone.
Yeah.
I've seen all three of my children who are, who rely on the phones and who do so much of their work through the phones, whether it's running their children, running their jobs, running their homes, running everything. So from that point of view, yes, I think it's quite remarkable to have an assistant like that where you don't have to dig for your emails and dig for everything. Everything is there. You can just ask a question and literally ask a question. You can just give it a voice instruction. And so I think we're probably the wrong kind of people to be judges on the benefits. But I think for David Young,
imagine this, David. Imagine you go visit your grandkids down in Australia.
Yeah.
You just say to your phone, I want to go down to Australia probably around this time. Yep. Find me some flights, find me a hotel.
That's right.
Check if my visa is sorted out. It would know if your visa is sorted out because it would look at your emails, and then it would apply for the visa for you. Yep. So imagine that.
That's exactly what I was thinking as well, because particularly trying to find flights, trying to find the right time to fly and so on, which is exactly what I'm doing at the moment, trying to find a period where it best suits me. Because I promise you, Viv, you can't believe how flight prices do differ. And I'm not governed by those things. I'm not governed by, I try to find the right time to go. So I can live with that.
And also, it would know your calendar as well, David. It would tell you, it will figure out your calendar, and it will figure out the flights, and it will figure the pricing. It will know the hotels you want to go to. And you can say, well, I'm down there. I want to go and see this particular cricket match, and it will book that for you as well.
All right. Well, I've been listening to this, and I've been put down by David as stupid, essentially. I'm old fashioned stupid, and I'm the modern day equivalent of General Ludd. I'm the equivalent of a Luddite, but that doesn't matter. I'm not sensitive much. Let's have a look at some prices now. The dollar rand is 18.45. What a performance! It was 19 not that long ago. Touch 19 not that long ago when fears came to the surface. A British pound against the rand is 23.53. The euro rand has broken the 20 barrier, 19.85. And the euro dollar, 107.60, which is a euro that has fallen by 0.4% in the last 24 hours. The gold price, 23.10, which is down $26 an ounce. But it's still holding above that 2300 level, which some people think is technically significant. The platinum price down $19 to $950 an ounce, and platinum down 15 to $885. Now, the one that is concerned...
Palladium,
yeah. The CRB commodity index shows me that one concern about the inflation rate-cutting story is the oil price in the last few days. Brent crude oil holding stubbornly above 82.55, which is flat on the day, but nonetheless much more than when we last spoke. $78.45 is the West Texas crude, also unchanged, but elevated stuff. Natural gas prices down 3.5%. The S&P 500 futures having soared yesterday. I'll talk about US CPI in a moment. 54.22, the spot, it's almost the spot because it's the June futures. 54.20, the US 10-year Treasury yield, 4.28%. The South African 10-year doing very nicely, thank you very much, 10.34%. And Bitcoin is 67,519. Now, how sick are the markets? You know that the markets go up when they want to go up. It doesn't matter what the data is. They'll say, oh, well, it's bad data, but that's good. Well, it's good data, and then that's really bad. You know the situation. Well, we had the CPI data in the last few months. It was 3.4%, came back to 3.3%. Everyone said, great, fantastic, thank you. Then it went up to 3.4% again. And then the latest print, very recently, 3.3% again. And the market soared this week to all-time record highs. David, doesn't that tell you that there was a lot of money waiting to be deployed everywhere?
Yes. And it's not ready to, it's not ready. It's not the time to start worrying about falling markets. When the market piles up, and you start to see this kind of buying, let it run. And you'll soon find that, you'll run out of steam. So I wouldn't get too concerned at this time. We're only getting to a time where rates are going to come down. And, if you picked it up, you can say that Powell, I say he blinked, he might have only blinked with one eye, but he certainly blinked and gave a very dovish outlook for inflation. So I think we're going to get a strong end to this year. Where we go from after that, that's always, difficult. But I mean, markets look good, and I think you're right. I think, money's piling up. Europe's a bit of a problem, and I think that's political. I think there are a lot of concerns surrounding these European elections and what happens in France, whether that's disrupted by the election. So Europe has been a bit of a concern,
I don't know what your guys thought. As someone in Europe there, Lindsay.
Yes.
I mean, Macron, what is he playing with here? I mean, what is the idea calling a snap election just after you get told by the public that they don't like you? What I mean? Uh-huh. You call it just after the polls come out and say, we really don't like you. So he says, vote for me now.
It's a complete shock. I mean, maybe the hatred sort of grows over the years and it starts to grow into something that he can't contain. Maybe at the moment he can contain it. But it was a shock, just like Rishi Sunak's July election was a little bit of a shock, not that much, because they were expecting an election. But Macron, I don't know. Maybe he just wants to get out. Maybe he just wants to go on the public speaking circuit, dinners and that sort of thing.
It's not a presidential. He stays. It's his party and the people underneath him.
Same thing, really.
The thing with Sunak was he knew he was going to lose, but he wanted to get out before Reform, which is the more right-wing party, was able to get his act together. So that's why Sunak wanted to get out, because I think that I looked at the poll recently, and Reform in some polls is like single digits away from the Conservatives. you know, in terms of some polling numbers.
Yeah,
and that's a Nigel Farage guy.
Farage is a joke, and he keeps on getting pelted. The first speech he gave when he announced he was leader of Reform, and he was vying for the Clapton seat in Essex, a woman threw a milkshake at him. And then yesterday he was in Yorkshire, and some people were pelting him on his open-top bus. So he's nothing. The interesting thing about the Tories is that from top to bottom, they're corrupt. They're useless. Sunak said, I had a really tough childhood because we didn't have a Sky News dish on our house. And people just said, what have you just said, for goodness sake? Stop shooting yourself in the foot. There's people choosing whether to heat or eat. And you're talking about Sky News dishes when you're a kid. It's rubbish. And his personal assistant, who is probably the closest person to this Prime Minister, put a bet on at Ladbrokes of £100 at 5-1 that there would be an election in July. And they've traced it back to him. He put a bet on because of the inside knowledge that he knew. The Tories, Viv, are, because I know you're a Tory, the Tories are just totally incompetent and stupid. Jacob Rees-Mogg made $7 million in his trading company because he knew Brexit was coming. Another one. Sorry, I'm ranting on about British politics, which is totally irrelevant. David, please give us your ups and downs on the JSE.
I met Rees-Mogg once many years ago when he came here as a youngster.
Bad luck.
And Oh, no. Well, he looked exactly the same. He's just gone a little grayer, but acted the same, wearing these suits and never taking a suit off. And, you know, his dad was editor of the Times, I think.
Yes, he was. Wasn't it William Rees-Mogg? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Your shares. I mean, yeah, I'll give you mine first because you can embellish them. Spar up again, nearly 4%. Truworths up 3.5%. Pepcor, another retailer, up 3.33%. Nedcor, representing the financial services and banks, up 3.25% downside. Goldfields, you've mentioned that, it's cold in Chile, down 11.25%. Telkom down 5.5%, I fear for this company. Sibanye down 4.1%, and Bytes down 3.7%. David, yours, please.
There's nothing outside of that. I mean, unless you start going to some of the very smaller companies like Libstar up 4%, Orion Minerals up 4.8%, and so on. These are very small caps. But overall, I think most of the gainers were in the stocks that you mentioned. I think just on the downside, I think Goldfields was the main feature as well. A couple of smaller companies as well down. Telkom, interesting. You know, I missed their results yesterday, but, you know, it's one of these companies who can't get rid of its, legacy businesses, and that keeps dragging it down. And it's going to take a long time before the new businesses can eventually offset that old business. But they were up, and I see they're down today.
Yes, they are. Yeah. As I said, just over 5.5% weaker at R23.60 per share. Viv, I've got to ask you this, and you've got to ask me, answer us honestly. As soon as you hear the word A, or the little acronym AI, and associated with the company, people just say, oh, it's got AI now, so let's buy it. I mean, that happened with Apple yesterday, which is a giant company. At what stage do people sit down and say, okay, it's changed the game, but it's not going to continue to be such a game changer, and we're going to have to sell off? I don't know whether PE ratios are of these companies, if that's a correct measure. But what happens if people start to say, okay, now the impact has run its course and we must get back to traditional valuations? Do you see that in the future?
Okay, let me ask you a question. I know NVIDIA ran like mad, right, the last couple of years. Okay, crazy improvement in stock price last couple of years. What do you think it did the last month after being up so massively in the last few years?
Oh, gosh. What's the... Tell us.
Are you all right?
42%.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. Oh,
it is 42% in the last month. Okay. This is after running like so crazy that at the end of last year,
Jesus,
basically, yeah, it's up 166% year to date, NVIDIA. Okay. Oracle came out with results this week, right? Missed on earnings. Okay. Oracle's share price went up like, I think, 14% on the news. Why? AI. So even Apple, I mean, Apple, this company that's been around forever, okay. It's now it's calling it AI Apple Intelligence, as Apple does, AI. But even Apple, right, rallied significantly on the news that they're doing this AI stuff. I think right now, it all depends on whether this stuff turns to be real or not. Like I always say, I don't know enough. All I know is that everybody that has the information and the money to bet on it is betting on it, and is betting on it in an unbelievable way. I've seen some indications out there that perhaps some stuff is not as like rosy as they think. There is a benchmark called the ARC benchmark, which shows that some under kind of intelligence around labor double situations that AI is not right there. But even, I don't know if you saw this in Tesla's kind of thing. Okay, so that vote went for Elon Musk, I believe. He won that vote for his compensation.
$56 billion. Not bad.
Yeah, but But look, I say, despite what you think of him, that was unfair for them to take that away from him. He delivered the results. Objectively, he gave the results. And you can't go after the fact that he's given you what you want, take the money away. So he won that. But in his little kind of thing about what he's done for Tesla, he had all these things, full self-driving, this model, that model. There was a little line there that says he has two Optimus robots working autonomously in his factory. That is a shocking thing to hear. These robots are working autonomously in his factory at the moment. Now, if you look down the line at what this kind of stuff would mean going forward, the Optimus stuff is world changing. We can joke about the personal assistant, we can joke about all this stuff, but if you had a robot that you could buy for like 100,000, 80,000 rands, that could come to your house and clean your house, cook your food, do your gardening. If an elderly person help you out of bed, you know, it would be a no-brainer to purchase that. And that would be a company that is significantly multiple times more valuable than Apple, you know, off the bat. And that is the kind of stuff that we are on the verge of. And I'm talking about in the next year or two, that kind of thing happening. It is possible that the technology somehow hits a wall. We don't get to that point. But right now, it looks like in a year or two, you'll be having these 100,000, 200,000 robots in your house, cooking your food and lifting you out of bed if you're too old, or, you know, giving you massages or whatever they do.
David and I suddenly going a bit chilly thinking about some robot with cold steel fingers lifting us out of bed. But what a terrifying world you live in, Viv Govender. I have to say, you probably think about this all day and go to sleep at night thinking about artificial intelligence, go to sleep, wake up, have dreams, all that sort of thing.
The scariest thing, right? You know, the scariest thing, right? They polled the AI researchers, the people that actually are doing this thing, and asked them what's called P-Doom. That's the probability of everyone dying, okay? What do you think the people that are doing this research put as P-Doom, as everybody dying in the next couple of decades because of AI?
What do you mean, the potential? Is that what you're asking us?
I'm looking at the percentage chance of we all dying, the odds of us all dying because of the thing that they are creating in the next, say, basically by 2040 or something, so the next decade and a half.
65%.
I'm saying it's like 1 in 5. They're putting the chance of what they're making killing us at 1 in 5 in the next 15 years. And they're making it. I mean, that's crazy. Imagine you're building something that's going to kill you and everyone you love and your family and everything. And this 1 in 5 is like, it's worse than Russian roulette, okay, for the whole world. And this is what you're working on.
David, what's the probability of you dying in the next 30 years, would you say?
No, that's very high.
Yeah, me too. I don't need some AI bloke to tell me I'm going to die during the next couple of decades. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much, David. You and I can go back to the real sort of medieval Neanderthal pursuit of football, which starts tomorrow. Mm. And there are 51 games in 31 days, and it's pure heaven for me. I don't need AI to enjoy this. But Viv, I'm not being frivolous at all. Your AI knowledge is exceptional, and we do agree that up to a point, AI is quite staggering. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. Viv Govender is from Rand Suisse, and David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. Back next week. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.